the divine souls. We've reached up until the 11th chapter of the Gita, which I briefly introduced at the end of yesterday's lecture. When Arjun becomes fully surrendered to Sri Krishna and asks for the vision of his almighty form. You might say, well, was Krishna not visible to Arjun before? Well, he was, but he looked like an ordinary man to him. He looked like, oh, he's my cousin, he's my friend, he's my charioteer. Now, Krishna, you're telling me that you're God, and the whole world is within you, and you permeate everything and everyone. But I don't see that. I just see you sitting here, and the whole world is around you, just like everyone else. So can you please show me? I believe you, but please show me. Since he was fully surrendered, Sri Krishna told him, you can't see me with your eyes because you have material eyes. So, divyam dadami te chakshu. I'll give you divine chakshu, divine eyes. Then you can see me. You can see my divine almighty form, the reality of my almightiness, which is hidden. Yoga maya samavrita. That phrase came in the 7th chapter. Shri Krishna is veiled by his yoga maya shakti. So no one can see his almighty power. But he graced Arjun, gave him divine eyes, and removed that parda. And with Shri Krishna's grace, he saw his actual divine almighty form. There are two things of note here. One is that Arjuna was fully surrendered to Krishna, and another is that he got what he asked for. He asked to see his almighty form, so that's what Sri Krishna showed him. Sanjay is describing the scene to Dhritarashtra, and he says, Tatraikastham Jagatkritsnam. Jagatkritsnam, the whole world. Pravibhaktamane gadha, of unlimited variations and of unlimited extent. Sharire pandavastada. Apashyadeva devasya sharire pandavastada. Pandav, Arjun, he saw sharire in Krishna's body, he saw the entire universe. Sanjay is telling. Then Arjun starts talking. He says, Pashyami devastav devadehe. Again, dehe, in your deha, in your body, I'm seeing everything. What? All the devas, meaning all the forms of divine God, all the celestial gods. Brahmanumisham kamalasanastha mrigansch. He says, I see Brahma, I see Shankar, I see everybody within you. Krishna, everything and everyone is within you. Nantam namadhyam napunastavadim. Pashyami Vishveshvara Vishvarupa. O Krishna, there's no beginning to you, no end, no middle part. You go on forever. Dhyava prithivyoridamantaram hi vyaptam tvayaikena dishascha sarva. Everywhere I look, I see you. No matter which of the directions I look, I see you everywhere. And when I look inside of you, I see everything. So it's like both situations simultaneously. The world is full of you and you're full of the world. The world is inside of you, but when I look inside of you, what do I see? The whole world. And when I look at the world, what do I see? You. Everywhere, up to the sky, down to the earth, in every direction, all over the place. This is described by Arjun in quite a few verses. He keeps saying, Pashyami, Pashyami, I am seeing, I am seeing. When you read this, the description is impressive, and it's one of the longest descriptions in any of our scriptures of a saint having the divine vision of God. There are a couple of things that are noteworthy here that you might not get just by reading the description of Arjuna seeing Krishna shining brighter than unlimited suns, showing all of his different almighty forms, showing that all these warriors, whoever was destined to die that day, is already entering into Krishna's flaming mouth as the form of Kaal, the god of death, because their time had come. He saw all of this, and he was amazed and awestruck. Now, someone might wonder that, okay, sharire and dehe, okay, he's seeing all of this in Krishna's body. He looks in Krishna's body and he sees unlimited earth planets with all the beings living there, celestial gods, galaxies. He's seeing all of that within Krishna. So is it like when you look on the television and they show you the whole, all the galaxies and you're seeing like, or through a telescope? No. It's not, this is not a metaphorical description. This is actual, what Arjuna is seeing, the actual universe. Not a representation of the universe, the actual universe within Shri Krishna. This is beyond our ability to understand. We can't imagine, how could Shri Krishna be everywhere? We could find it easier to accept that in his formless aspect, he could be everywhere. Because that makes more sense to our mind. Like air is formless and it's everywhere. Space is formless, it's everywhere. Heat energy is formless, at least to us. It's that subtle that it's formless and it permeates the atmosphere more or less here and there. So those kind of things can be everywhere. Vyaptam. They can pervade. But can someone with a form pervade everyone and everything? That's what Arjuna is saying. Vyaptam, Krishna, I see you everywhere. So, it's not a case of some kind of, like, he's seeing Krishna everywhere. Actually, Krishna is everywhere. That we can't imagine. You can think of Krishna being at one place at one time. He has a form. He's standing there in front of you. How can he be there and there and there and there and everywhere at once with one divine body? It doesn't fit into our mind. And then think that within his divine body, unlimited galaxies could be dissolved into every single pore of his body. He's that great, that powerful. But that's his divine body. And that's what Arjuna is seeing. He's actually seeing Krishna's divine body. His divine almighty form. What do we take away from this? One very important lesson is that God's form is real and omnipresent. That's important. Even Shankaracharya admitted this. When he said, yadyapi sakaroyam ityadi, even though God is sakar, see, he's admitting God is sakar, not only nirgun, nirakar, he's saying he's also sakar. Yet, even in his sakar form as Nandanandan, the son of Nanda Baba, he's omnipresent. He's everywhere, not just in his formless form. That's a really important thing to understand. God's personal form is absolute. Not just his formless form. People understand that's absolute. No, his personal form is absolute and omnipresent. And he exists in all of his forms simultaneously. Think about that. He is omnipresent as Krishna, and he's omnipresent as Shiva, and he's omnipresent as Ram, and he's omnipresent as Vishnu, and he's omnipresent as Durga. In all of his forms, he's omnipresent simultaneously. Which is why whatever soul worships him in whatever form, when he becomes God realized, he realizes the whole world as the form of that form of God. Because Krishna is omnipresent in all of those forms simultaneously. How? With his Yoga Maya Shakti, if you want an answer. But the how is beyond our intellect. Hows and whys, we can answer those questions here in the material world. We can't answer the hows and whys of God and of the divine world because his power is absolutely beyond our intellect. This is a really important thing to accept for a devotee, that the personal form of God is absolute, omnipresent. It's not just a manifestation of God, like God is there in the divine world and then he just manifests himself in a personal form at one place. Yeah, God is in the divine world, but that form with which he manifests himself, he was already there. He's already omnipresent. Krishna is omnipresent. If he wants to manifest himself, he just appears at one place. Arjuna goes on. Oh Krishna, there is no one in all the three worlds who could be equal to you. You are the greatest. You are the greatest. So this is the description in gist of Arjuna getting that divine vision of Shri Krishna. With his divine eyes, with the divine power he got from Shri Krishna, he saw that Krishna is omnipresent, that the whole world is within Krishna, and he is everywhere within this world. He is all-powerful, all-knowing. He's the supreme being. He practically saw all of that. Then he says, Visho na jane na labhe cha sharma prasida devesha jagannivas. Krishna, I feel totally disoriented. I don't know which way is up, which way is down, what's left, what's right. I don't feel at peace. Labhe na sharma. I feel unsettled seeing you in this amazing almighty form. Why does he feel unsettled? He says, I want to see you like you were before, as my friend. I know I asked to see you in your almighty form, but I think I'd rather like you, I like having you as my friend. Then Krishna became normal. That vision of Krishna's almightiness was gone and he was just sitting in front of Arjuna on the chariot as he had been before. You see, every soul has a choice. God doesn't have to be almighty for us. Arjuna was showing, this is beyond the philosophy of the Gita. Gita only indicates these little things. But by Arjuna saying, I feel unsettled. I want you to just go back as you were before. I like having you as my friend. By him saying that, he's indicating something else which is beyond the Gita. That is that you can have a personal relationship with God which is closer than just accepting him as Almighty God. You can think of God as formless. That's fine. But then you can't really relate yourself to a formless God. How can you have a relationship with something that doesn't have a form? So luckily for us, God does have a form. Normally when people start thinking of God with a form, they think of Almighty God, like a supreme judge who hands out the consequences of our actions, who is responsible for creating, maintaining, and destroying the universe. That supreme Almighty God, all-powerful, all-knowing. Normally people think of God in that way. And that's the form in which Arjuna saw Shri Krishna. He saw his total almighty power. And it actually unsettled him. Why? Well, don't you feel nervous when you meet even a great person? Someone that you respect and look up to. When you meet them, you're amazed and you're in awe and you feel nervous. You're a little unsettled. So imagine if you met supreme, almighty God. Oh, that's how Arjuna reacted. Even having received divine eyes. Oh. So it was okay for a while, but he was trembling and shaking and it was too much. So Krishna gives us the option. He says, yes, I am supreme, almighty God. But you can also relate yourself to me in a much sweeter, closer way. You don't have to think of me as Almighty God. This is what's indicated here, but not described in the Gita. Shri Krishna had already shown, before he told the Gita, before he fought the Mahabharata war, when he was in Braj, he had already shown the other relationships which could bring a soul even closer to God. This relationship where you think of God as Almighty Supreme Power, that's called Shanta Bhav. Bhav means a feeling of relationship. Shanta Bhav means thinking of God as the supreme ruler, like a king, and we're all subjects in his kingdom. It's a relationship, but it's quite a formal and distant relationship. Those saints who have attained God in a closer way than that are called rasik saints. In Ved, there's a word used to describe God. Raso vaisaha. Rasa, ras. Ras means literally like nectar, the sweet juice of something. So the nectar of bliss, that is God. And the one who drinks that bliss is rasik, like a bumblebee drinks the nectar of a flower. So God is ras, and the saint is rasik because he drinks the divine nectar of God's divine bliss. God is also rasik because he enjoys his own blissfulness. So he is ras and rasik, and the souls are rasik. But we only call those saints, rasik saints, who have said, no, 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 God, I don't want you in your almighty form. That's too distant, too formal. I want to be closer than that. Those rasik saints have said, in your worldly terms, to make us understand, in our local language, how to relate to God, think of four types of worldly relationships. Servant to master, closer than that, friend to friend, closer than that, mother to son, or father to son, or daughter, and closest of all, beloved to beloved. Now, we're comparing it to material relationships because that's what we know, we need something to go on. A saint's relationship with God is completely beyond material desires. Neither of them has any desire except to make each other happy. The saint desires to serve God and God desires to serve his devotee. But for us to do devotion and attach our mind to Shri Krishna, we need to develop a loving relationship with him. So to do that, if we want to go beyond Shant Bhav, the next one is called Dasi Bhav, where you love God as a servant with love, a very nice, loving, caring master. There's still a lot of formality in that relationship, but it's a lot closer than being a subject to the king. The king probably has some servants who do some service in his castle, cook for him, clean. So those servants, they have access to the inner chambers of the king's castle, which ordinary subjects don't have access to. So the servants are much closer than the ordinary subjects of the king. They don't even need an appointment. They just go in and do what they have to do. Even if some foreign diplomat comes and wants to meet the king, he needs a proper appointment. The servant just comes and enters, does his seva. But between servant and master, there's still quite a bit of distance. The servant can't just run up to the master and, tell him a joke, or run up to him and give him a hug anytime he wants. No, there's restrictions. So, if you want to go closer than that, the next relationship, higher, is called Sakyabha, which means friendship, fraternal relationship. Obviously, friends are even closer than a servant. That king might have some friends that he grew up with before he was a king, before he even knew, that I'm a prince or I'm a king. He just grew up with his friends. They used to play together, tease each other, play games, get angry at each other, have wrestling fights. Those same friends, when they grow up and they see, oh, our buddy from childhood, he's a big king now? Whoa. So when they see him in public, okay, he's a king, sure, that's fine. But when they're in private, those same friends, they treat him the same way they did when they were 4 or 5 years old. Hey, buddy, how's it going? They'll tease him, they'll joke with him, they'll talk with him just like friends talk. Because friends don't feel that sense of formality. There's a little bit of formality between friends. But compared to the servant-to-master relationship, there's almost nothing, almost no formality compared to the servant-to-master relationship. Just like Krishna's friends. Krishna's friends didn't even think of him as God. Can you imagine? That same Krishna in front of whom Arjun is trembling and he's seeing the whole world inside of Krishna, that same Krishna in Braj is getting teased by his friends. Do baba do maiya, aisa kaun kanhaiya. They used to chant that. Who is the one with two fathers and two mothers? Oh, it's our kanhaiya. They would tease him. And Krishna liked it. Krishna thinks, oh, over there in the divine world, everybody's always doing my aarti and singing Vedic stuti and praise of me. It's like if someone just keeps eating sweets all day long, he gets tired of it, he wants to eat some namkeen, something salty. So he comes down here and his friends, those illiterate cowherd boys, they tease him like that and it sounds sweet to Krishna. The gopis tease him as well. Whenever they give him gali, they scold him. Hey, hut! Prana, what are you doing? So Krishna says, what? I didn't hear properly. Can you say that again? They call him some name, He'll say, I didn't hear. Can you say that again? He wants to hear it again. Itna meetha lag raha hai. So this is the sweetness of friendship in Sakya Bhava. In fact, it's Krishna's same Yogamaya Shakti that you've heard about a couple of times, which allows this to happen. Because that Yogamaya Shakti makes God forget He's God and makes His friends, those Sakhas, who are saints, so obviously a saint knows God in totality, but they forget. Because if they're conscious of God's almightiness, how can they have a friendly relationship like that? They'll be like Arjuna. again trembling on the battlefield in front of Krishna, then how could they be playing with Krishna, wrestling with him, going out, sharing lunch with him when they're herding the cows? They couldn't do any of that if they saw him in his almighty form. So Yogamaya just makes that almightiness merge into Krishna's loving power. He has a loving power, prema shakti. That prema shakti is his supreme power. That's the essence of all the powers, you can say. So that power makes Krishna, you can say, he loses the conscious awareness of the fact that he's God. And the saints also lose the conscious awareness that Krishna is God. And they just see, obviously they're still seeing him as the form of unlimited divine bliss. And they feel an unlimited divine attraction to him. But in that, they don't think of him as God. They only see, he's my friend. But there's something even beyond that. It's called Vatsalya Bhava. Mother to child, or father to child. That's even closer, because we know that the king, if his childhood friend stops by, yeah, they can have some talks, and the friend will treat him like an equal. But the mother of the king, she can actually scold him. The king, who has the right, he's probably deciding if someone gets hanged or not, if someone is put to death or not, or if we go to war or not, that same king can be scolded by his mother. What's the matter with you? You don't know anything yet? She scolds him like a little boy, and he says, oh, I'm sorry, mother. He has to, because she has that right over him. She's his mother. In the same way, there's a relationship that the soul can have with Sri Krishna, where Krishna feels himself to be a little boy, and the soul is the parent. The saint, or the devotee, is the parent, the mother or father. So then, what do you do with Sri Krishna? Well, you bathe him, you dress him how you want, decorate him how you want, feed him what you think is good for him, put him to bed when you think he needs to sleep, wake him up when you think he needs to wake up, all the things a parent does. You have full right over him. And Krishna submits himself to you, just like a little boy. He's totally yours. So how much closeness is in that, you all know. Those of you who have had kids, you know how much closeness is in that. Imagine having that same closeness with Sri Krishna. That is Vatsalya Bhava. And beyond that is Madhurya Bhava. Madhurya Bhava includes all the feelings of the other bhava. It includes the feelings of servitude in Dasya Bhava. It includes the feelings of friendship in Sakya Bhava. It includes the feeling, the loving feelings of a parent to a child in Vatsalya Bhava. And it includes a feeling which is above and beyond that, the beloved to beloved feeling. You can't say it's like husband and wife. We don't really have anything to compare it to in this world. You can just say the divine beloved of your soul. The closest relationship, where you feel, you lose even the feeling of the distinction between where you begin and Krishna ends. That's Madhurya Bhava. The gopis loved Sri Krishna with this Madhurya Bhava, and for this reason, their foot dust is sought after even by Brahma, even by great jnani saints like Uddhava. Uddhava, after he went to Braj and met the gopis, he didn't even know what he was getting himself into. Krishna sent him to Braj from Mathura. He sent him into the villages where Krishna had grown up, because he wanted him to realize the smallness of his jnana. Uddhava only thought of God as formless. He was a jnani. He was the topmost jnani of his time. So Krishna thought, he's missing out. You know, he should understand the sweetness of loving me in my personal form. He doesn't even realize that, and I can't grace him directly because God doesn't directly grace any soul. It has to be through Guru. So I'm going to send him to the gopis, but if I tell him to go and learn from the gopis, because he's my friend, he's going to laugh at me. He'll say, "This gopis? They're illiterate cowherd women? I'm the greatest gyani of my time, and you're telling me to go and make these illiterate villagers my guru?" So Krishna told Uddhava, "Oh, you know, the gopis are missing me very much. They're feeling so much separation from me, so why don't you go and share your gyan with them? Teach them that Brahm is omnipresent. So why are you worrying for anything?" Okay, then Uddhava felt good. He went to teach the gopis. But what he ended up doing, once he met the gopis and with his own eyes saw their elevated divine state, which was much higher than his, he surrendered his knowledge and made the gopis his guru. And with their grace, he realized Krishna in his personal form, and he wandered around in Braj for 6 months, just enjoying seeing Krishna's leelas happening there everywhere, even though he had previously thought Krishna's only in Mathura. And after 6 months, he became, you know, conscious of, "Oh yeah, Krishna had sent me here. He's probably waiting for me to come back. I should go." So he went back to Mathura, and Krishna, with a smile, was waiting for him. "Ah, kya haal hai Uddho?" So he said, "Asama ho charan renu jushama hansyam vrindavane kimapi gulmalatau shadhinam yadustyajan svajan marya patham chahitva bhejur mukunda padavim shruti mrigyameva." He says, "Krishna, I have one more wish, if you could fulfill it. Please let me be born, let me take the form of any plant or creeper or flowering bush in Braj, so that I could get the foot dust of the gopis as they walk by. Some dust will go up in the air from their feet, and I'll be able to do abhishek of that." Imagine the greatest gyani saint of Krishna's time praising the gopis in that way. So from that we can get a little clue as to the greatness of Madhurya Bhava. This philosophy is far beyond the Gita. That's why we say where the Gita ends, the Bhagavatam begins. Because this philosophy of Raganuga Bhakti, of loving God in this way, how the Rasic saints did, that's in the Bhagavatam. It's not the topic of the Gita. The topic of the Gita is understanding how almighty Krishna is, and that anyone can attain him through his grace. But he does indicate at a few places that you can also get something more than just liberation or just attaining me in my almighty form. So after Krishna had returned to his human-like form in front of Arjuna, then he told Arjuna a couple of things right at the end of the 11th chapter. "Naham vedair na tapasa na danena na chejaya shakya evam vidho drashtum drishtva nasimam yatha." Hey Arjun, no one can get my divine vision through the following means: not by studying the Vedas or scriptures, not by doing tap, not by doing dan. Tap means austerities, dan means charity. Na chejaya, nor by performing Vedic rituals or doing all the good karma. No one can attain me, no one can get my divine vision through those means. The same thing is said in Kathopanishad. Nāyam ātmā pravacanena labhyo namedhaya navahunāshrutena. God is not attainable through meditation, intellectual meditation, through hearing speeches about God, through studying scriptures, through debating about God. Doesn't matter how intelligent someone is. So then what? Veda says, Yame vaisha vrinute tena labhyastasyaisha atma vivrinute talupvam swam. Same Kathopanishad, the second half of that mantra, says, if you surrender to God, God accepts you. That's it. So there's no means of you reaching God, but if you surrender to God, He will grace you. And through His grace, you can know Him and you can attain Him. This is what Shri Krishna tells Arjuna. Bhaktyatmananyaya shakya ahamevam vidhorjuna gyatum drashtum cha tatvena praveshtum cha parantapa. Arjuna, I am attainable through bhakti. Bhaktya means bhakti se. Ananyaya, through ananya bhakti. Remember, I told you, he stresses on this ananyata in almost every chapter. Through exclusive devotion to him, he is attainable. And what does bhakti mean? I keep reviewing this every day. Bhakti means attaching your mind to God. Making Him the goal of your life. Not attaining more of the world, although you have to live in the world. But you don't live in the world with the goal of finding happiness. You live in the world in order to support your body, because the goal of your life is to use this body to do devotion to God in order to attain real happiness. With this cold I've had for the last few days, I can't taste food. It all tastes the same. So I really realized, you know, I don't feel like eating. I don't want to eat, but I have to eat something. My body needs something. So really, that's how we should be. Why should we look to food as a source of happiness? We should just eat it. Oh, my body needs something. Like you pull into the gas station. Do you joyfully pull into the gas station? Oh, I can't wait to fuel up my car. It's so satisfying when I fuel up my car. We're just fueling up our bodies when we eat food. We should have the same reaction. You put some gas in the car, good, now I can drive some more, put some food in my body, now I can do some work some more. That's how we should be. That's how we're meant to live in this world and turn all of our affection and desires towards Krishna. This is bhakti. Ananya means turn all of your desires and affection towards Him. Anyashrayanam tyago ananyata. Narad ji says in his Narad Bhakti Darshan. What is ananyata? It means leaving the hope of all others and only having one. Eka bharosa eka bala. Eka asa vishvasa. One hope, one faith, just Krishna. He's my everything. Shri Krishna says, with that kind of ananya bhakti, I am easily attainable. And then once you surrender to me through bhakti, you have a choice. He says, gyatum, you want to know me. Drashtum, you want to see me. Praveshtum, you want to merge into me? That's up to you. Or he says, cha. Means like dot, 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 etc. Like there's something else I'm not telling. You can know me, you can see me, you can merge into me, or, well, maybe I'll tell you some other time. In the Bhagavatam. Gita just indicates it in a couple places like this, that yeah, you can know God, you can have the divine vision of God, you can get liberated from Maya and merge into God. These are all possibilities, but there's something even beyond that. What's beyond that? those saints attain something beyond both liberation and the vision of God in His divine almighty form. They go beyond that if they worship God with any of those four bhav I told you. Dasya bhav, sakhya bhav, vatsalya bhav, madhurya bhav. You go beyond. The first level of divine attainment would be liberation, where you merge into formless God. But since that's a divine state of no experience, so if you go beyond that and attain God in His personal form, that's considered to be higher, although technically it's the same God, you haven't attained someone else. But the jnanis who merge into God, they don't know God anymore, because their mind also merged in God. So the bhakt who gets the divine vision of God in His almighty form, he went beyond where the jnanis went. But he only has shant bhav, because he's seeing God in His almighty form, which is blissful. He's getting unlimited divine bliss. But there's something beyond that. So those saints who worship with dasya bhav, they go beyond that. And the sakya bhav saints go even beyond that. Vatsalya bhav saints, even beyond that. And madhurya bhav saints reach the ultimate height that any soul can reach, which is right up to what we call Mahabhav Bhakti. See, in the divine world, you can have Brahmanand, that's the bliss of formless God, which is, as I said, non-experienced once you merge into God. Even God in that formless way is unaware of His own blissfulness, because His mind is not active either. But this is Brahmanand. Beyond that is Aishwaryanand. That's the bliss of Almighty God, but in His personal form. That is said to be unlimited times greater than the unlimited bliss of Brahmanand. Like, you have Gura, Jaggery, that's like Brahmanand. You refine it, you get Chini, that's like Aishwaryanand. You further refine it, you get Mishri. That's like Premanand, the third thing. The bliss of divine love when you get a close relationship with God. Now what I'm telling you here, this is not explicitly told in the Gita, it's only indicated. It's fully described in the Bhagavatam and by rustic saints in our history. So that Premanand is beyond Aishwaryanand, which is beyond Brahmanand. It includes the blissful feelings of Brahmanand and Aishwaryanand, and it goes beyond. And Premanand itself is divided into 8 levels. Prema Bhakti, Sneha Bhakti, Mana Bhakti, Pranaya Bhakti, Raga Bhakti, Anuraga Bhakti, Bhavavesh Bhakti, Mahabhav Bhakti. So depending which of those 4 relationships you adopt, you would go higher and higher in those states of divine love. And only those who worship with Madhurya Bhava, they reach that highest state of Mahabhava Bhakti. So this is just to give you an understanding that there are differences even within the divine attainments. That it's not just attaining God. Attaining God is a catch-all term. You can attain God in different ways depending on what you make your goal and what your guru has attained, because you will receive the same thing that your guru has attained that he will give you at the moment of complete heart purification. So this, in gist, is the philosophy of the 11th chapter. Tomorrow we'll continue with the 12th chapter, where Shri Krishna is asked a very good question by Arjuna, that Krishna, you are worshipped by some in your formless aspect as Nirakar Brahma, and you are worshipped by some in your personal form as Sakar Brahma. So which one is better, the devotee who worships you as formless or the devotee who worships you in your personal form as Krishna? So what Shri Krishna answered, we'll see tomorrow.